I'm Jerry Weaver. I'm an alcoholic.
Can
you hear me all right?
Yeah.
I'll try to stay in front of this thing. My sobriety date's July 2nd, 1989. My home group is a group called There Is a Solution. They wrote a chapter about us in the big book. I see somebody's actually read the book here. All right. That's good. We meet in a town called Holly Springs just outside of Raleigh on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 o'clock. It's a good group of Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're ever in the Raleigh area, come check us out. I got a sponsor who has a sponsor, so on and so forth, and have found for me that being active in a home group and being involved, actively involved in being sponsored and sponsoring other people it helps me stay connected to the solution, helps me stay somewhat in my right mind, and helps me to continually grow spiritually. Good to be here tonight. I appreciate being asked to come. It's always an honor to come to anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I appreciate committee or John might be a committee of one. I know that people wear badges, but that doesn't always mean that they have a say-so in some things, but maybe you do here. I often wonder, though, I'm a guy that suffers from low self-esteem, right? Like probably a lot of us. And I often wonder, what does it mean when you get asked to speak at this, but your name's not on the real flyer for the actual roundup? Is that, hey, Jerry, you were close, but you just didn't quite make it. And that's the story of my life. You just almost got there, Jerry, but just not quite good enough. Hey, it's good to laugh and good to have fun. I'm a guy that's been sober since my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't say that to impress you or try to separate myself from anybody. The reason I say that is I was sober about 9 months. And I was a guy that had was introduced to the solution and to the steps real early, right when I got sober, and had a pretty powerful experience the first couple months I was sober. And as I started going to meetings in the area that I'd got sober in, I heard a lot of people or had experienced seeing people that were relapsing. And I remember a guy that I looked up to had relapsed, and I was just kind of like shocked at it. I didn't know that it was actually something that people did. And I went to this meeting one night, and this guy had just relapsed, and he said that he talked about how it had enhanced his recovery by relapsing. And I'm like, daggone, maybe I need to go relapse. And then I started going to, I was going to a lot of meetings, and I'd hear people that were just really depressed and having a hard time, and I'm over here kind of excited about my life and being sober, and I started wondering if I was doing something wrong, or I was wondering if maybe I was missing something. I wasn't digging deep enough inside of myself to find all these problems that some of these other folks were talking about. And I really started to wonder if I was doing things right, because I was having a little bit different experience than other folks. And I was sitting in a meeting one night, and it was a speaker meeting, and the guy got up, and he was dressed nice, his hair looked good, and I'll explain that later on tonight. But he got up, and that guy was full of enthusiasm, and he made a comment that he had been sober since his first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at that point, at that time, he'd been sober about 36 years, I think it was, maybe 34 or 35. But he talked completely different than most of the people that I had heard. He came from a position of power, and he talked about how what he had found here was that Alcoholics Anonymous actually does create permanent recovery. And that what we have here is more than his term was more than a first aid kit for alcoholism. And that what he had found here was hope and power and strength, and that it had helped him to form a relationship with a power greater than himself that helped him overcome every problem that life threw at him. It did a lot more than just keep him sober. And I had never heard anything like that. The guy's name was Tom Ivester. And it literally changed my life. In that I knew that I wasn't alone, that I was a guy that had found great power just in being sober for 9 months. And so I sometimes reflect on that, and I'm grateful that he came in there and said that. And so I say that just to let you, well, number one, you don't hear it a whole lot. And what I have found here is tremendous amount of power. And not only to keep me sober, but to give me a good life. And that what's happened to me, John mentioned it, that as a result of taking the steps and just taking simple actions, and I don't mean anything mystical or magical, I'm talking just praying, going to meetings, having a sponsor and talking to my sponsor, doing a fourth step and confessing all of the things that I've done to my sponsor, going back and making amends, praying, meditating, and getting involved in service and doing things that don't make any sense. I mean, it doesn't seem like that's a solution at all. But as a result of just taking those simple actions, that slowly over time my life has changed. I've changed, and I've had that spiritual awakening that the book talks about. And all that means is that I think different and feel different and act different, and I have a little different reaction to life than I used to have. It's not anything, real magical or mystical like we sometimes, it sounds like it is, but it's really not. And for me, I'm a guy that, I'm an action guy, and I've always been involved in Alcoholics Anonymous ever since the first day. That doesn't mean I've always enjoyed it, I've always just, walked through life blissful, but I've been able to listen to people in front of me, and I've been able to stay active, and that by doing that, that's gotten me through all kinds of things that life will throw at you. And I've stayed sober through good times and through bad times because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the power that I found here. And so, the message that I just try to carry is that Alcoholics Anonymous has worked really good for me. And I've seen Alcoholics Anonymous work really good for lots of other people that are willing to stay in the middle of it. I'll quit preaching. I did drink. So I'm a guy that, I started drinking when I was about 12 years old. And, it lit me up like a firecracker. That's not completely true. I'm a guy that will, if I start talking too fast, I'll lie. It's like just inherent in me, right? The truth never comes out real quick, but a lie will come out real fast, right? You just kind of blurt it out. So I can remember being 6, 7 years old and drinking beer that my uncle had or my grandfather had, not really thinking much about it. So I was a social drinker up to the age of 12. Went right into full-blown alcoholism in the basement of a house. And I was a guy that had a lot of reasons not to drink. I grew up in a home that there was a lot of drinking, a lot of partying. My parents would have these big parties, and me and my brothers would be hanging out, we'd be messing around with people, and they always started off real fun and exciting, but they would always end with, somebody getting into a fight, somebody accusing somebody of messing with the girl. Somebody getting mad and leaving, and then you get a phone call that they got locked up for drunk driving, and somebody would go get them, and it was just, gun might go off in the house. Looking back on it, my parents were pretty cool. I really didn't think much about it at the time, but looking back on it, we had this basement in our house. My dad had those old velvet posters that would glow, that they'd put those black lights on, and those things would fire up, and he had all these bar signs, and my dad had the big old afro, and he had those pork chop sideburns, and he had tattoos on his arms, and in the 60s and 70s, not everybody had tattoos like they do today. I mean, we got babies born with tattoos nowadays. If you had if you had tattoos back then, you were either, you know, had been in prison or been in the military or maybe were, you know, in a motorcycle club. And, he'd been in all of them. But he had this tattoo he had this one tattoo over here of a devil, which was real cool, and this tiger. And then he had this ribbon on here that said mom, and then there was a ribbon over here that had this lady's name on it that wasn't my mom's. And I don't think anyone ever asked him who it was. He's just, I don't know. I think I might call him on the way home tonight and ask him. But anyway, they'd have these parties, and I would get scared once all the, you know, towards the end, and I can remember thinking I'm never going to drink. And I saw it, you know, cause a lot of problems, and I'm in the basement of the neighbor's house, and at the age of 12, and we decide we're going to drink some old granddad. And there was really no reason to drink. I think we were just bored and wanted to experiment with it. And I'm a guy that was just, I really didn't understand what that was at the time, but I was full of fear. Matter of fact, if somebody said, "Hey Jerry, you got one word to describe your alcoholism, what would it be?" My word would be fear. I mean, I was a guy that was just petrified of life. I was confused about things. I thought I should be somewhere other than where I was at. I thought everybody knew everything and I didn't know anything, and I was just scared. And when I got that whiskey in me, all that went away. That fear and doubt and confusion, it just disappeared. I mean, I can remember that night just like it's tonight. And it lit me up like a firecracker. I mean, have you ever seen that movie? There's a show on TV now called Limitless. And this guy takes this pill called NZT. And man, he takes that pill, and the everything kind of turns into techno color, and he automatically knows stuff he didn't know before, and he's strong, and he knows how to do karate, and it makes him smart and fast, and that's what alcohol did to me. And that's what it felt like. None of that stuff was true. I know now it's a false sense of power and a false sense of strength and all that, but that's what happened to me. It lit me up. And I woke up the next morning in a pile of vomit. I couldn't remember everything that happened the night before. I had blacked out a little bit, and I was extremely sick. First thought that came to my mind was I got to do that again. Just as quick as I could, I got back down in that basement and started drinking. And the same thing happened. All that fear, doubt, confusion went away. And, I mean, alcohol gave me power. It basically, up to that point, I was separated from everything, and alcohol connected me to It connected me to the world, connected me to people. And I look back on that. I was a guy that if I hadn't found alcohol then, I probably would have committed suicide pretty quickly. Because my mind was not a good place to be. It just wasn't. And basically what happened was I just became a crazy, rebellious kid. I got in a lot of trouble. I enjoyed getting into trouble. I liked causing trouble for other people. I thrived on that negative attention that came from getting into trouble and being a hoodlum and being a rebel. I got kicked out of two school systems for life. They basically said, "Hey, you can't bring him back here anymore." I mean, they just don't like kids that fight people and stab people with pencils and try to cut other kids' fingers off with bandsaws in shop class. And, they definitely don't like you selling drugs and alcohol in school. And I thought all that stuff was cool. I thought it just made, you know, I just thought it was cool. And I never really realized how hard that was on my parents and how hard it was on the family. And until I got sober, and family didn't know what to do with me. I got into a lot of trouble, and I got charged with assault with a deadly weapon with intent to kill, assault on a police officer, and that's how I got into the military. And I went into the Air Force, and got out of most all the trouble that I was in. And I can remember when going into the military thinking that it's going to teach me some discipline. It's automatically going to force me to be responsible, and I'm going to prove to people that I can amount to something and that I can do something good with my life. And I had all those good intentions. I meant that. I mean, I think that's really what I wanted. And what happened was, I stayed sober through the boot camp, which was about, you know, 8 weeks. And man, right when they let us loose, they said, don't go here, don't go there. And of course, that's the first place we went. And, I started right back drinking and I was off to the races. And, you know, I started blacking out a lot. I'd wake up and not remember what happened the night before. I'd wake up and people would have to tell me what I did. I'd wake up and, you know, I'd go into the mess hall to eat breakfast and there'd be a guy sitting there with a black eye. And I'm like, man, what happened to your eye? And he'd look at me like with this look of disgust. And I punched him the night before and don't remember. You know, and I lived in things like that would happen. I lived in a dorm with about 200 other guys. And one morning I wake up and I'm cold and I'm laying on the bathroom in this dorm. It's not my bathroom, but I'm feeling cold and I'm looking around and I'm dressed up in some women's clothing. And, it's not good to wake up in a dorm with 200 guys dressed up in women's clothing. And that's one of those times where you're glad you had a blackout because you don't want to know what happened the night before. And no one's ever come back and made an amends to me for violating me or anything like that. So I figured maybe I was just modeling or something. I don't know what happened, but it's just not a good situation. And, but I wouldn't think much about it. I just kind of thought that happened to everybody. And, you know, I guess it don't happen to many. And I was a guy that just, I lived in this fantasy world that, you know, one day my ship's going to come in and everything's going to be okay. I'm going to have the right person in my life. I'm going to have enough money. I'm going to have a better job. And that all this stuff is just going to kind of happen. And I was kind of obsessed with the idea that if things out here could just get better, then I'd be okay. And I just constantly searched for stuff to make me different. And I got married at a young age, thinking that was going to force me to be responsible. It's going to, you know, teach me to do the right thing. And it's funny how alcoholics always think you get married or have a baby that's going to fix something. If you're still drinking and caught up in alcoholism, that's going to make things worse, is all that does. And I was a guy that felt one way on the inside and acted another way on the outside. I mean, I always wanted to do the right thing. I had all these good intentions. I never could act out on my actions were always the opposite of kind of what I wanted to do, and I didn't know what the heck was wrong with me. What I can tell you is I was a bad husband, and all I was worried about was myself. I was physically, mentally abusive to my wife. Now I will say this: she was physically, mentally, and abusive to me as well, and we kind of took turns hurting one another. I mean, I don't know how to say that other than that's what it was. And sometimes she'd win, sometimes I'd win. It just depended on what the circumstances was. And it was not a good situation, though. It was just not a good situation. I was a bad member of the Air Force. I worked on airplanes drunk many, many, many times. We'd go out and get drunk at lunch and come back and work on planes. And 82nd Airborne jumped out of those planes. And if you're in 82nd Airborne back in the 80s, I apologize. Or if you had to fly those planes, I certainly apologize. But we didn't even think nothing about it. I mean, we were just absolutely consumed with ourselves. Or I was consumed with myself. And basically what happened to me was I had some family that started talking to me about my drinking. They started talking to me about the way I was treating my wife and treating other people, and I didn't like that too good. I thought that I had it in my mind that there's nothing wrong with me. If you people would just leave me alone, everything would be okay. If she would just get off my back, everything would be okay. If the Air Force would just leave me alone and let me do what I want to do, things would be different. You know, if the sheriff would stop coming by the house and accusing me of stuff that I've not done, that things would be different. I've done everything that they've accused me of. You know, and if the problem was always out here, and it was never me. And I don't know. I think people can hear me without it, but
probably.
I made an attempt to get my life in order. Kind of my first shot at it was. It was January 1st, 1989. I had made a bunch of promises to my father-in-law and some other family members about getting my life in order and quitting drinking. And I tried to quit drinking and tried to do better on my own. And man, things just got worse. And I kind of came to one morning, and me and two guys were getting ready to make a 300-mile drive to rob a guy. And it made sense at the time. I don't know. We could have gone 5 miles this way or 8 miles that way and robbed a bunch of people, but we decided we're going to drive 300 miles to Oxon Hill, Maryland to rob a guy. And that morning, or that, I guess it was somewhat early morning, probably 4 or 5 in the morning. It was like this dark cloud came over me and it said, "Hey, you need to do something with your life. You need to get your life in order." And I had a younger brother that had recently gotten involved with a church. And he talked about how the church had helped him and it got him, you know, on the right track. And he said that people were praying for me, and if I ever needed any help, give him a call. So I pulled off at a convenience store and got on a payphone, and I called my brother and got him up, and I said, "Man, I need some help." And he said, "Well, we've been praying for you. Come on over." I ditched those two guys and went over to talk to my brother that morning. It was January 1st. It was a Sunday. New Year's Day, he's getting ready to go to church. I mean, it's just a wonderful, time to get your life in order, to make some New Year's resolutions, and you just ride off into the sunset after that. I went to church that morning. I was dressed up in some pants that were about 4 inches too short. I had this old disco shirt on with a big collar on it. And I walked up in there. I looked like Pee Wee Herman coming up into church. And, you know, people prayed with me and they tried to help me. And I really thought that just by attending church that one morning that my life was just automatically going to change. That's that delusion that I was in. And that's not what anybody told me. That's just kind of the delusion I had told myself. And, you know, 3 days later, I'm drinking. And I don't understand, you know, why that's happening. And I got to this point where I stayed involved in that church for a little while. And I started carrying this little pocket New Testament around with me. And I'd carry it in my front pocket. And I'd go to work and I'd pull that thing out and start reading it so people could see me, you know, doing it. I thought that if they just saw me doing that, that they would think I was on the right path. Sometimes I might preach to somebody at work, or I'd read a little passage to them out of it. I started listening to gospel music on the radio, and I started carrying one of those upper room books around with me, and I'd read that thing in the morning out in the parking lot. I'd pray, and 11 o'clock, I'd be drunk. And I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I'd make all these promises to people about things I was going to do, and I'd get drunk a few hours after making promises. And I shaved my head. And I worked with a guy that drank just as bad as I did, and he came into work one morning and his head was shaved. And I'm like, "Man," I asked him, I said, "What's up with your head?" He said that he hooked up with his organization that believes that the problem of the man stems from their hair. And that this is a true story. And their program of action is you shave your hair off, and that signifies your old idea is dying, or the old man's dying, right? And that when your hair grows back, you're reborn and you get a new kind of new ideas on life. And I was like, "Man, I need some of that." I went home and I shaved my head, and I looked like an idiot. I had gotten into a fight with a guy not long before that, and he cracked me right here in the head with this big old hickory stick. So I had this big fresh scar there, and I walked up into work the next morning. I looked like Charles Manson coming to work. You know, so I mean, you know, here I am. I'm driving around listening to gospel music, preaching to people with the New Testament in my pocket. I got that shaved head. And, it's just, I mean, I was in what they call full flight from reality. Now, see, a few people in here have tried the shaved head thing. It won't work, Pierce. Yeah, no. No, 3 days it worked for me. Yeah, I got sober 3 days after shaving my head. And I really didn't know what was wrong with me. Cause I was a guy that I wanted to get my life in order. I wanted to stop doing what I was doing. And no matter what I tried, I couldn't stop. I went to psychiatry. I tried eating healthy. I tried exercise. I tried reading books. And none of that stuff, it seemed to me that none of that stuff worked. And I had no knowledge of alcoholism or the Alcoholics Anonymous or 12 steps. I got suicidal. I'm a guy that I attempted suicide 3 times. The second suicide attempt, I had a dog that had mange. And yeah, you'll realize that I'm not a bright man after this. And the vet had given us this poison to treat the mange on this dog. And I had this bright idea that, well, if that stuff will kill mange, maybe it'll kill man. And one night I'd been out, you know, doing a bunch of stuff I shouldn't be doing, had broken a lot of promises I'd made to my family. And I really felt like my family would be better off without me. So I pulled some of that poison up into a syringe, shot it up my arm, laid down on the kitchen floor of the house there and went away from here for a little while. And, you know, I did that just as simple, nonchalantly as I'd go over and get a cup of coffee. And there wasn't any thought that maybe this ain't a good idea or maybe you ought to call somebody. Because I didn't call anybody. I didn't write any notes. I didn't write any farewell letters. I just wanted to die. And obviously I didn't die, but that led to 5 days in the hospital and absolutely knowing that I would never drink again. I'd never stick any more needles in my arm after going through that experience. And I got out of the hospital 5 days later, making all kinds of promises to people. And about 3 days out of the hospital, I had this bright idea that if I just drank some 8-ounce beers, that it would be okay. I mean, anybody can drink a few little beers, and it's not a big deal. And I drank those beers, and I was off to the races. And, you know, when our literature says we've lost the power of choice in drink, I understand what that means. Because that morning, I would have told you that there's no way in hell I was going to drink. I made a decision consciously that morning before I left the house that I wasn't going to drink. I was going to go to work and come straight home. And I couldn't keep that commitment because my mind is different than a normal person. My mind basically forgot about being in the hospital for 5 days. My mind forgot about all the pain and suffering that it caused my family. My mind forgot about all the pain and suffering that it caused me. For the idea that, hey, if you just drink an 8-ounce of beer, it's going to be okay. And that's what that means when it says we've lost the power of choice. That we have these strange mental blank spots and that we can't recall what taking that drink does to us. I also believe that there's no human power that can help me with that. That there's no medication, there's no therapy, no matter how much my mommy loves me or my wife threatens me, that's not enough to stop me from doing that. That's got to come from a power greater than myself. I don't think I have any more choice today than I did then. I haven't gotten that choice back. Now, the good news about all that is I've never had the mange. I could be wrong about this, but I swear I think as I've aged, it's helped my hair to grow. Most people, when they get old, their hair starts falling out. Well, mine hadn't. I don't know. I mean, it's gotten thicker. I think it has something to do with that mange poison that I shot up. But I don't know. It's good to laugh. It's good to laugh. But, you know, when an alcoholic does stuff like that, family and friends, the book talks about the family and friends are mystified when he walks into a bar or a saloon after going through experiences like that. And that's what happened to my family. They were baffled. How could he go out and drink and do that again after being in the hospital for 5 days, almost dying? It doesn't make any sense to a non-alcoholic. And basically what happened was I got discharged out of the Air Force. My time was up. And so they let me go. And I'm basically living like an animal. I was convinced that the Air Force was my problem, and that once I got out of the Air Force, things were going to be different. And when I got out of the Air Force, I went down quick. I mean, I started living like an animal. My wife had left and said she wasn't coming back. I'm doing things I never thought I'd be doing. I'm hanging out in places I never thought I'd be hanging out. I'm hallucinating. I'm paranoid. I think everybody's out to get me. And, you know, I had basically given up on life. And I was still caught up in that delusion that all my problems were somebody else's fault. Man, if my dad hadn't moved me around a lot as a kid, I wouldn't be this way. If my mom had loved me as much as she loved my younger brother, I wouldn't have such low self-esteem and things would be different. And if she would just lay off of me, things would be okay. And it was just on and on and on, you know, other people's problems and caused my problems. And basically what happened to me was I left the guy's house one morning, and we were out of booze, we were out of money, and I was going to make about an 8-mile walk to a grocery store to write a bad check. They kept cashing them, so I kept writing. And they didn't want to keep giving me money for that. I don't have a problem keep writing. And I'll tell you, that morning when I left that guy's house, there wasn't a whole lot going on in my life. I mean, everybody that had like been pressuring me or had been on my back, they were leaving me alone. And I didn't have a whole lot of responsibility. We lost a house. The car that I had, the motor blowed up in it. And, I had just kind of resigned myself to the thought that I'm just going to live, you know, kind of trickle on to some miserable existence of life and eventually just kind of disappear. And when I was walking down the road that morning, it was like my whole life flashed before my eyes. And it wasn't no blinding light or wind blowing through me or a burning bush type experience. It was just a moment of clarity that, man, I had just turned 22 years old. My life shouldn't be ending. It should be just starting. And I kind of reflected on that. And I realized that I was an absolute zero that morning. And that everything I had ever tried, I had failed at. And I had this little bit of knowledge that I'd realized that I was an absolute fraud. And an absolute loser. And I can remember saying two things out loud. I said, there's got to be something better than this. And then I said, God, please help me. Kind of said it out loud. And I've been sober ever since. And again, I don't want to imply that I had this, you know, this burning bush experience. That's not what happened. But it was like somebody looking back on it, somebody came and just turned me around and put me on a different path. Because my plan to go get that, write that bad check and to go buy the bootleggers, it never happened. That's what I set out to do. And the next thing I realized, I'm sitting in a detox. Now what I can tell you is that morning, and I don't want to contradict anything that's in some of our literature and other people's experience, but I didn't hit a bottom that morning. I mean, the night that I shot up that dog poison, I was in way worse shape than I was that morning. You know, something happened to me that was not of me. Something happened inside of me that I didn't create or try to make happen. Nobody talked me into that. Nobody forced me into that. Nobody did an intervention on me. Nobody gave me a court slip to go to anywhere. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with any of that stuff. That's just not my experience. The next thing I know, I'm sitting in a detox. I got no knowledge of AA, 12 steps, no knowledge of what a detox is. guy comes in and starts talking to me from Alcoholics Anonymous. And when he came in, he didn't ask me a bunch of questions. He didn't say, how are you doing? That's the stupidest question in the world. I'm sitting here in a funny blue outfit on suicide watch, and somebody wants to come and ask you, how you doing? Well, not doing too damn good. And he didn't ask me if I thought what I thought my problem was. He just came in and started talking about himself. I never heard anything like that. He talked about how he drank. He talked about what happened to him. He talked about how he felt. And some of the stuff he said was identical to some of the things that I had done. And I'm thinking, man, he's telling me stuff I would have never thought about telling anybody else. And what happened was there was an identification there that I didn't get from anybody else. I had all kinds of preachers, school teachers, guidance counselors, high school principals, first sergeants, captains, neighbors, a couple of dogs and cats try to help me get sober or try to help me get my life in order, and there was no connection with any of them. But when that guy came in and started talking about his alcoholism and how he had recovered, there was an identification there. Our literature says that until that identification can be met, little or nothing can be done for the alcoholic. That's almost a lost art nowadays in AA, that type of talking one-on-one with a person. And nowadays we just want to go meet somebody at the literature stand and throw a meeting directory in with a bunch of phone numbers and tell them to go to 90 meetings in 90 days and get a sponsor. That might be part of the solution later, but not the first night. And it changed my life. I've been sober ever since that day. And what that guy did was he helped me to realize the lie I'd been telling myself all my life was that I'm different. I thought I was different. I'm the only one that's ever done these things. I'm the only one that's ever felt this way. And when he sat down, I knew for a fact that there was one other person that understood. There was one other person that had done some of the same things I did, and that I wasn't alone anymore. And all that isolation I had built up around myself, it almost like melted away. And that, you know, that if there is any magic in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's right there is what it is. It's one alcoholic helping another. And not long after that, I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was introduced to the steps. I was introduced to our literature. I was introduced to good groups. And, you know, I was a guy that was taught that if I wanted to get better, I had to take action. And it's not a program of feelings or thinking. That's a program of action. It takes simple actions that you change. And, you know, I took those steps relatively quickly. I turned myself over to a power greater than myself. I just believed that whatever power got me through that crazy life drinking might help me stay sober. I didn't put a name or a label on it. I was told to forget everything that I thought I knew and just try to believe that there's something out there that would help you. That was enough. That was sufficient. And I turned my life over to that, and I did a fourth step and did a fifth step. About 8 weeks sober, I'm out making amends. I got no money. I was told to go talk to people that you owed money to, go make good on those bad checks, even though you don't have no money. Now, nowadays, everybody wants to pull up the money and then go pile it on to people. I made arrangements. Now, I'd pay you $5 here and $10 there until the stuff was paid off. One financial amends I made, it took me 10 years to pay it off. I gave those folks money every month for 10 years. And when you get sober and you see all that mountain of junk in front of you, you never think you're going to be able to get through any of that stuff. Man, there's just no way that things are going to work out. And you know, what the book says is true. When we straighten out spiritually, we straighten out mentally, physically, and materially. That's been my experience. And, you know, I was a guy that was just stark raving sober. I went to all kinds of meetings. I stayed involved with service, with a sponsor. And about 4 years sober, so you know, even sober, you know, for me, I've had periods where my life has gotten dark, and where you know I'm like, man, things ain't gonna work out. And you know, I had the experience at about 4 years sober of stealing money from work. Me and my first wife had gotten back together after I'd been sober about 9 months, and we tried to make it work, and it just didn't. It got worse. And so here I am 4 years sober, still really in the middle of AA, just being a little dishonest about some things. And right? Just a little. And but I had the experience of good sponsorship, good home group. And when I finally got honest about stealing money from work, when I finally got honest about my relationship, there was help available to me. You know, I had a sponsor that gave me some really specific actions to do that I thought were drastic. You got to go back and turn yourself in at your work and make amends for stealing all that money. I thought that was drastic. I thought when in the step, when it says injure them or others, right, you make amends, injure them, I thought I was another. And that's exactly what he did when I said he laughed at me like that. And anyway, long story short, I got through a divorce several years sober without a fight or an argument because of Alcoholics Anonymous and because of people that shared their experience with me and showed me how to do that honorably and respectfully. I was able to go back to my employer and make an amends for stealing a large sum of money. I was able to basically, was willing to go to jail, knew they were going to fire me. And when I made that amends to that guy that owned that company, he looked at me and he says, "You know what, Jerry?" He says, "I've been forgiven for worse." He says, "The best thing we can do is forget about this and just move on." And I'm thinking, man, I've lost sleep over this for 3 months. You just want to forget about it now? Come on. But I've learned a lot from non-alcoholics. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for non-alcoholics. And what happened to me was, I can tell you that because of the steps, that I haven't stolen anything since that time. And I haven't been in a broken down, beat up relationship or treated a woman the way that I treated my first wife since then. And that's because of the power of God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of those steps. And I can remember when I was going through that experience, I looked at my sponsor and we were reading some stuff in the book. And I told him, I was like, you know, there's not a lot in the big book on steps 6 and 7. And he said something to me that just, it really changed the course of my life. It changed the course of how I thought about things. And here's what he said. He said, "If there was more you could do, there would be more written." And when he said that to me, it just like hit me right between the eyes. And it woke me up. He says, "Your job is to give up. Your job is to surrender and to honestly and truly be done doing those activities, those defects. And it's God's job to change you. It's God's job to give you the power to do something different." And, you know, and what happened to me was when I was in the middle of all that stuff, life got dark. And I started blaming other people again. I started blaming God. I started blaming AA. Man, this stuff don't work. And, everything I did was my fault. Every action I took it. And it looks like you're getting further and further away from God or getting further and further away from that power. And my experience was that when I finally gave up and truly became willing to change, there was unlimited power available to me. And that there was power given to me to do the opposite of what I used to do. And, you know, I found that in steps 6 and 7. And what I learned at 5 years sober was that Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps are about the business of living and about getting on with the business of life, not about just overcoming drinking. And that AA is a way of life. That if I start practicing as a way of life everywhere that I go, then I start getting different results. And I started to realize that there is unlimited power here. I started realizing that I should be the same at work as I am in my home group. I'm in my home group, I'm helping people, I'm prepared, I'm there early, I'm staying late. I should do that at home. I should do that out in the community. And when I started doing that and stopped kind of treating life and the program as a game, and realized that it was my life, my life started to change. And I did not get fired from that job. I paid the money back because it wasn't mine to take. But I did not get fired, and I started taking the traditions and the steps into work. Worked at that same company for 18 years and became a president of one of their companies. That's after stealing a large sum of money from them. When I overcame my resentment at women, which took a couple years, it wasn't anybody else's fault, it was just me. I mean, when I finally got over it, a woman just kind of popped up out of the ground. And, you ever had, I'm sure y'all have had that experience when you kind of get over something, the light comes on. And I've been remarried now for about 20 years. And me and my wife have a really good relationship. We don't try to change one another. We don't fight. We don't argue. When we first got married, we had one little scuttle, but we just don't argue. We don't fight. I don't want to imply that we agree on everything, but we have never done battle. Never. My first wife, I mean, we did battle time after time after time. And, you know, my wife now, I mean, I've never cussed at her. I've never called her a name. I've never raised my hand to hit her. That's not me. That's Alcoholics Anonymous.
True.
It's nothing that I've done. I haven't done anything to do that. And my life today is, well, I'm a guy that's overpaid never in my life. You know, I came here just hoping to maybe get a car and maybe my wife would come back and stop sleeping with my cousin. And that's not a good situation. And I've been given a lot more. I mean, I've been not only have I had freedom from alcoholism, but I've been given a completely new way to live. And I've been given a relationship with a power greater than myself that keeps me out of my mind just enough to survive. The literature says our main problem centers in our mind, not in our body. That's true even after you've been sober for a little while. And sometimes my mind just won't shut down. And that's why I gotta continually, you know, take an inventory of myself. I gotta continue to look at myself. I gotta continually stay current with my sponsor. I gotta stay active in my group. I gotta continue to pray. I gotta continue to meditate. And most importantly, I gotta continue to help other people. The literature says we don't have any defense against the first drink. Right? The defense must come from a higher power. So, I would submit to you that today that's just as true as it was 27 years ago. That if I don't stay involved in all that stuff, I'm going to get a little weak here, a little weak here. I'm going to blow something off and act like it's not a big deal. And that defense that I have between me and that first drink is going to drop. And the next thing you know, I'm going to take that drink. And so that's why I got to stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to stay active in all aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous. And because I see people every day that don't do that. The next thing you know, they're back in detox, or we're at the church doing a eulogy for them. And I don't want to be that. You know, I've been given a gift, and my job is to pass that gift on to other people. You know, and I'm a guy that believes that I suffer from an illness that only a spiritual experience can conquer. That's a spiritual illness. And that it's not solved by medication or therapy or, you know, talking to a few people. It's solved by the power of God that's given to me by taking those 12 steps and trying to take those actions as quickly as possible. I'm about out of time here. I'll share one quick story with you. We started late, right?
Yep.
One quick story and I'll sit down. I was sober about 7 years. And I had made an amends to my mom when I first got sober. And as I stayed sober and learned more about the steps and kind of the purpose of those steps and the purpose of a real amends, I realized it was a little more of saying you're sorry and, yeah, son, just, you know, just don't drink anymore. And I started just becoming a little conflicted with that. And so I took my mom out to lunch one day, and I just had a conversation with her, and I know that I've been sober for a little while now. We never really had a full discussion about all the things that I did when I was drinking, and all the harm that I caused you. And you know, I just wanted to let you know that, you know, that, and what happened to me was I realized I'd never really given her a full opportunity to say anything back to me. And I just asked her. I said, "You got anything that, you know, that you need to talk about or that you want to say to me?" And she'd been waiting. And she'd been waiting for that one. And she was not at all mean or angry. She just matter-of-factly talked about how she felt when, you know, when a 13-year-old son had gotten locked up for stuff, and how she felt when she got a call, you know, from the sheriff saying, "Hey, we got your 17-year-old son here locked up for assault with deadly weapon, intent to kill," and all the times that I didn't come home and I didn't know where I was at. She told me a story about when I was in a blackout one night. I was uptown. We lived in this little town. I was uptown causing a ruckus, and they called her, and she came up there, and I had beaten her up in the parking lot of this convenience store. And I don't have any knowledge of that. And she went on to tell me, you know, other things like that. And it's like, I was listening to this, and I'm like, you know, how do you make amends for some of that stuff? And, you know, I just asked her. I said, "Well, I regret doing that. You know, I wish things were different." I said, "Is there anything that I can do to make it right?" And she just told me that the way that I had been living the last 7 years was amends enough. And that she appreciated the person that I was turning into. And she told me that she just wanted me to continue to stay active in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm a guy that don't have a choice of staying active in AA. But what I learned through that was we talk so much in AA nowadays about me, and me and my recovery and how we do this for me. And it's not been my experience. I saw my mom become absolutely free because of my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. When she was able to talk to me, I could see just stuff just disappearing from her. And I realized that what we do, it ain't for us, it's for other people. And that now my mom ain't worried tonight if somebody's going to call her up and say, "Hey, your son's locked back up," or "Your son's been you know, dead, got caught in a car wreck." And so I, you know, she became free because of my involvement in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, if it all ended today, I've gotten way more than I ever deserved. And Alcoholics Anonymous is not a selfish program. It's not selfish at all. It's selfless. I've been given a gift. My job is to try to help somebody else have that same gift. So, thank you.